Blackhouse Coastal Fever from Australia and Falling Thunder and the Stones with Midnight Rambler, of course, to start the hour. 17 minutes past 8, the Full English Breakfast Show. A man who lost his job due to the coronavirus lockdown has been invited to interviews and offered work after giving out his CV at a railway station. Trevor Wolford, who's 63 and once worked as a butler at Buckingham Palace, spent months applying for jobs online. After hundreds of unsuccessful applications, he went to Leeds railway station with a sign saying, "I would like to work." He's since been inundated with messages on social media, including young people who plan to follow suit. Now, Mr. Wolford said, "I was just doing what I needed to get my CV out there. I never expected this. I've had lots of messages from young people saying you've been an inspiration. It's a competitive market out there. I'd encourage people to do the same thing. Don't get despondent. Get out there and hand out your CV."
It's good news.
He had a sign round his neck.
Did he?
Yeah, saying, "I want a job."
Well, it worked.
It does. Perseverance pays off, doesn't it? The Full English Breakfast Show. More tricky pop music questions from Sarah coming up in a few minutes' time. Here's M People, especially for Rob. And How Can I Love You More? Okay, do your worst.
No, come on, come on, come on, come on. Question number one. How many number one singles does the Smiths have?
Oh, my God. Two.
Is that your final answer?
Three.
Name the two, name the three.
Panic. And what difference does it make?
No, they didn't have any.
I nearly said that.
Question number two. Which song gave Madonna her first UK number one?
Like a Virgin.
No.
Lucky Star.
Oh, dear.
True Blue.
No. Come on, get into it.
Well, I don't know. Go
Into
on.
The Groove.
Into the Groove, okay.
And finally, which single gave Whitney Houston her first UK number one in 1985?
How Will I Know?
No.
Greatest Love of All.
No.
I don't know.
Slow One. One of your favourites.
Go on, tell me.
Saving All My Love for You.
Oh, no.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
Told That's you. A-
What? Big fat zero.
Absolutely. Has happened sometimes.
You do
it?
Like this one, really, don't you?
No.
Oh, you can't not.
Each to their own. Quite happy to play it.
Riviera Radio. Business.
Morning.
Morning, Robert.
What do you mean you're tired?
What do you mean I'm tired?
You just said you were tired.
Well, you know, I've got a lot going on.
What, sort
Very
of
busy.
Going down to the fridge to make yourself a sandwich? Quick glass of wine after lunch?
Feels like a little bit of working from home jealousy shining through here. Why
really?
Don't you set up a studio at home?
I haven't got the space.
That would be fine.
Well, it would just be too noisy.
It'd be nice. Could really work out well, couldn't
it? I have thoughts about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Save you hours a day in commuting.
Save me a lot of money in petrol and payage fees, that's for sure.
Good for the environment.
And I like coming in, and, you know, kind of like coming in, yeah.
Okay.
If that's all right with you.
Yeah, please carry on. Listen, you've done a remarkable job during this turbulent time, and we've all been very proud of your efforts.
Thank you.
Apart from those 5 weeks you had off.
Four, actually.
Extended holiday.
4 weeks, not five.
Sabbatical, some people would call it.
Okay.
Sabbatical to the Winans.
No action on Wall Street yesterday, but a good day to start the week in Europe.
Yeah, European investors gaining some confidence yesterday, say US markets closed for the Labor Day holiday. After being shaken at the end of last week with the pullback in the high-flying tech shares, it was good to see European markets higher. Stocks rose with broad gains led by the automakers. Stocks 50 was up 1.6% at the close. Investors, of course, will be a little bit cautious ahead of the open on Wall Street today, see if that recent sell-off in those best-performing stocks will continue amid concerns over elevated valuations. Although looking at US futures, they are positive this morning. Oil price been under a little bit of pressure, fell once again yesterday amid concerns that the rising number of COVID cases will result in a reimposition of restrictions that will limit demand for energy, along, of course, with the end of the US holiday driving season. all of which could squeeze demand. Brent trading below $42 a barrel this morning. Opening calls on the European bourses looks like we're going to add to yesterday's gains. Currently calling the FTSE up 5 points. DAX over in Frankfurt, 15 points. CAC Corona Paris up 1 point.
Yeah, some analysts saying that it wasn't really a surprise that there was a big sell-off in tech stocks at the end of last week, considering they'd risen by 75% since the low hit in March. And it might be a bit of a struggle putting those gains back on again.
Yeah, listen, I think there's got to be some natural scepticism about the ability of the equity markets in general, and specifically technology sector, to continue to add to those gains. There is a structural change that's taking place. The working from home winners, the changes in the way in which we communicate and which we operate, means that many of those technology companies will continue to do very well. A lot of that good news, you could argue, has already been priced into those shares. $6 trillion has been added to the technology markets gains in the United States over the course of 5 months. That is an incredible performance. So I think you need to be making sure, as we've been saying many times, that you're in a position where you've been able to hedge some of those gains and continue to think about diversification. There is a sort of debate taking place about whether we're going to see this sort of grand rotation now away from technology shares, looking at some of the value plays. I don't think that's likely to happen. Some of the traditional value players, where some have suggested there is some opportunity, I think we'll continue to face a tough regulatory environment, a changing economic backdrop, and of course you continue to see the impact of, particularly in financials for example, the impact of lower interest rates that likely remain low for a prolonged period of time.
Tesla's an interesting one, isn't it? Rocketed up in the first 6 months of the year, and some pretty heavy falls at the end of last week. Will it be able to regain its momentum, do you think?
Tesla's such a difficult one, isn't it? It's the real Marmite one. There's some that believe it's going to lead the fundamental change towards electrification. Others believe it's just simply an overvalued car stock. Yeah, the shares have been an incredible performer. They were up 500% year to date before we got to Thursday, and they've fallen 22% on Thursday and Friday, if memory serves me correctly. So they've given back a lot of those gains, but still, of course, up quite dramatically for the year. Their valuation is absolutely huge, certainly compared to traditional car manufacturers. They're worth more than, if not all of the, certainly many of the major car manufacturers put together. So I think, yeah, it's a question, can they lead the advance in technology that will change the world, or do they look like an overvalued car company, is the real debate there.
Hardly surprising to seeing Sterling taking a hit after the noises coming out of Downing Street yesterday.
Yeah, pound certainly under pressure as investors begin to price in the increased risk of a no-deal Brexit. Sterling declined as much as 1% against the dollar yesterday, trading just above 131 this morning, extending its drop to the longest since June. Speculation gains some momentum that the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, is prepared to tell the European Union is willing to let talks fail rather than compromise on what he sees as core Brexit principles. Clock, as we know, is ticking. Both sides have agreed the need to reach a deal by mid-October. Remember, there's the EU Council summit on the 15th of October. That's seen as very much a deadline date in order to pave the way for a smooth exit at the end of the year. On balance, whilst the risk of a no-deal certainly increase, we still see a deal as perhaps more likely than not. There's the economic consequences. I think the government would want to avoid the triple threat, which would be in the fourth quarter of a recession and an increased unemployment, a second wave of COVID, throw in thirdly a no-deal Brexit, and that would create such a difficult backdrop in terms of the UK. And then you've got the second order consequences. We know a no-deal would strengthen Scottish independence movement and create that hard border on the island of Ireland, which of course has broad ramifications there. So still a lot of work to be done. There's still time to do it. But as I say, it's all looking a little bit nervous.
The EU's already said no, though, hasn't it? Michel Barnier, on his way to London today, said no.
Yeah, there's been a lot of no's, but there's been climb downs and compromises at the 11th hour. So the UK is probably going for the thing, you know, a hard a hard view. We will certainly not blink first. The question is, will the European Union decide to compromise?
Well, it can be little more than a negotiating gambit on the behalf of Boris Johnson and his chief negotiator, David Frost, surely, because, you know, he's kind of stuck in a cul-de-sac at the moment, Boris Johnson, whichever way he turns.
It's a different approach compared to what we saw from Theresa May, who was talking about compromise and getting the deal done. And I think it's been a very tough start, at least from the Boris Johnson's Brexit negotiation team, and saying, or at least putting out the idea there, that they believe that sovereignty is a price worth paying for if they don't have to sign up to many of these elements that they don't agree with, particularly around the level playing field, which would mean that the UK would have to adhere to a common set of rules and standards on things like taxation, environmental standards and workers' rights.
You rip up the withdrawal agreement, so that raises the specter of a hard border on the island of Ireland, and if you wanted a free trade deal with the United States, you'd never get through Congress.
Well, there's it depends how those elections go, of course, so we need to wait to see what happens.
I don't think it really matters. I mean, the makeup of, with the Irish-American pressure in the States, then they would never allow a free trade deal to go ahead if there was a hard border on the island of Ireland. That just goes without saying, doesn't it?
I haven't looked at that, to be honest with you. It's not something I've considered. So it's that would be taking it to another step. But I think there's a number of elements would need to come into place before we can make that assumption.
All right, we better just all rush down IKEA and build ourselves some furniture.
Yeah, IKEA continuing to expand, while many traditional retailers are abandoning shopping centres and transitioning increasingly to an online model. IKEA said it will push ahead with opening its first shop in a shopping mall in the United States, saying that the modern physical retailer needs to be built around local community needs and complementing a mix of different elements, including digitalization and sustainability. IKEA investment in the San Francisco mall is worth more than $260 million, so a significant vote of confidence there. Also said they are in active talks with potential real estate sellers in several European cities, including Barcelona, Madrid, Milan, Rome, and Berlin. IKEA increasingly looking to add sites in the heart of cities to complement those of the larger out-of-town stores that we're all, of course, very familiar with.
Just open one in Nice, actually, a concept store. You can go in and look at the catalogue and choose your stuff and then order it.
Is that nice?
Haven't been there.
Okay. But why can't you do that online? Why do you need to go and look at the catalogue?
Well, because you know, there'll be friendly assistants there to help you make the right decisions, I suppose. But they're opening a mega store in Nice. It's going to be the start of 2022 now.
It's going to be a redecorating year for you, isn't it? Lovely. Put the new studio in, fill it up with IKEA, boom, away you go.
Foreign exchanges, please.
Pound against dollar coming in at 1.31 this morning. Euro dollar coming in at 1.18. Getting a pretty miserable €1.11 for your British pound this morning.
I bet you've never built a bit of IKEA furniture in your life, have you?
I tell you what, when I was in Switzerland, I bought this little tent for the kids to play in from IKEA that seemed to work very well.
That's hardly building IKEA furniture, is it? It's just one of those pop-up ones.
Beyond that, I haven't, I have to admit.
Okay, talk to you tomorrow, thank you.
Have a good day.
Hank Potson, Barclays.
On FM and DAB Plus across the Côte d'Azur, on your phone and worldwide online. This is Riviera Radio with the latest local news for the south of France.
Sarah Lyster has the top stories across the Riviera.
Two city council staff from a nursery and primary school in Nice have been placed in quarantine after testing positive for COVID-19. The two employees from the school in the Libération district of Nice worked in the catering and cleaning departments. Five new cases of COVID-19 have been reported in Monaco on Monday. Latest figures show that 153 residents have been affected by the coronavirus in the principality. Two residents are currently hospitalised and 42 people are being followed by the Home Monitoring Centre. Meanwhile, the prefect of the Alpes-Maritimes has announced that joggers will be required to wear a mask in urban areas. The announcement was made on Monday and will now mean that joggers, like pedestrians, are required to wear a mask. The Regional Health Agency has announced that there's been another case of dengue fever in Nice. It also said that other suspected cases are being checked. The disease is spread by tiger mosquitoes. Residents in the area of Nice where the cases have been reported are being told to eliminate any areas of stagnant water to protect themselves from mosquito bites and to be alert for symptoms of dengue fever. According to Public Health France, the number of admissions to A&E in France related to drowning has fallen by 12% between June the 1st and September the 1st this year. However, the drop in the number of cases did not apply to all regions of France, with the Provence-Alpes-Côte d'Azur region recording similar figures to last year. On a national level, some 961 visits were recorded over this period compared to 1,142 in 2018 and 1,040 in 2019. Public Health France says that the drop can be explained by the health situation, which saw the closure of many local swimming pools, leisure centres and amusement parks, as well as restricted access to beaches. In more than 4 out of 10 cases, the emergency visits concerned children under the age of 6, while those over 65 represent 13%. In national news, French police have detained a man as part of investigations into a series of mystery horse mutilations across the country in recent months. Police say the 50-year-old was arrested at his home in Alsace. He is wanted in connection with an attack in the northwest of Dijon last month. Dozens of horses have been killed or maimed this year. The latest attack occurred south of Dijon on Sunday. Police do not know why the horses are being targeted. They also do not know whether it is the work of one person or if initial attacks have inspired copycat killings. Finally, according to a new study, French people who reject mask wearing are more likely to be older, educated women who support the Gilets Jaunes and the virus specialist Didier Raoult and would refuse to have a coronavirus vaccination if one were available. The French think tank, the Jean Jaurès Foundation, has suggested that anti-maskers were spread across the political spectrum, with the research results showing a slight tendency towards the right. The findings come after a demonstration in Paris by anti-maskers at the end of August.
Riviera Radio, Sports News.
Cycling Primo Roglic will be looking to hold on to the leader's yellow jersey when the Tour de France resumes this afternoon following Monday's rest day. Stage 10 is 168.5 kilometres on the flat between Île-d'Oléron and Île-de-Ré and will be a chance for the sprinters to stretch their legs. Could you manage that? It's on the flat.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah. Roglic holds a 21-second advantage in the general classification over Egan Bernal, with Guillaume Martin of France in third place, 28 seconds off the pace. Adam Yates of Great Britain, who held the yellow jersey for 4 days, is now an overall eighth, more than a minute behind Roglic. Tennis: Dominic Thiem's into the quarterfinals of the US Open after beating Félix Auger-Aliassime in straight sets. The second seed came through 7-6, 6-1, 6-1 and will now play Alex de Minaur in the last eight. In the women's event, top seed Serena Williams battled into the last eight thanks to a 6-3, 6-7, 6-3 win, which took over almost 2 hours. She'll now play Svetlana Pirinkova of Bulgaria. Football: Northern Ireland have been thrashed 5-1 at home by Norway in the Nations League, while Scotland had a great 2-1 away win in the Czech Republic. There's more action tonight with England away in Denmark and France at home to Croatia. Here's more football from BBC Sports.
BBC Premier League update from the home of Premier League football.
Hello, I'm Andy Barwell at the BBC Sports Centre. Manchester City midfielder Phil Foden and Manchester United forward Mason Greenwood have left the England camp after breaking coronavirus quarantine guidelines in Iceland. The Football Association is investigating the breaches after Saturday's 1-0 Nations League victory. More details from the BBC's football correspondent John Murray.
Both Manchester United and Manchester City were very quick to put out statements condemning their behaviour, but I'm sure that a lot of people will be surprised, A, that they weren't towing the line in the first place in their position, involved in the senior squad for the first time, but also in the circumstances of the COVID restrictions. In terms of whether Manchester United and Manchester City take action, well, that's up to them to decide.
The England manager Gareth Southgate is preparing for the Nations League game against Denmark on Tuesday and says now is not the time to discuss either player's long-term future.
I'm a father with young children. I know young adults, rather. I know young people get things wrong. We're not excusing that in this instance. And, you know, we've got to assess everything else moving forward.
Everton have made a big signing with the Colombian attacking midfielder James Rodriguez joining them from Real Madrid in a deal worth over $26 million. The 29-year-old joins the Toffees on a 2-year contract with the option of a further season. Newcastle United have signed the striker Callum Wilson from relegated Bournemouth. It's a four-year deal, the fee understood to be worth around $26 million. Newcastle have also signed Scotland winger Ryan Fraser from Bournemouth. He was a free agent after his contract with the South Coast club ended in June. For more football news from the BBC, go to bbc.com/football.
BBC Premier League update from the home of Premier League football.
Cricket's England play Australia in the third T20 international in Southampton later today. Play starts at 7 p.m. French time. England have a 2-0 unassailable lead in the series. Formula One, the sport is to revive reverse grid sprint races in place of qualifying. Mercedes had blocked plans to trial the new system this season, but Sunday's Italian Grand Prix has given fresh impetus for the idea. It's hoped the new system will be trialled again later this year and then will be used more widely in 2021. Mercedes still needs to be persuaded to give the new system a go, as unanimity is required for any rule change during a championship year. And in golf, world number one Dustin Johnson's won the season-ending PGA Tour Championship, scooping $15 million into the bargain. The 36-year-old American finished on 21 under par in Monday's final round at Eastlake, then ended three shots clear of fellow American Xander Schauffele and Justin Thomas. It's Johnson's first FedEx Cup title after he squandered the chance of winning on the final round 4 years ago.
The weather forecast, brought to you by Oyster, the world's finest blue water sailing yachts. Oyster Yachts. Beyond expectation.
For coastal areas up to 20 miles offshore the Isle of Maritime in the VAR, the general situation is a depression 1,013 millibars over the Tyrrhenian Sea. Winds are variable, force 2 to 4, becoming easterly force 3 to 5 this afternoon. The sea is slight, visibility is good. Barometric pressure at Saint-Jean-Cap-Ferrat, 1,016 millibars. And the outlook for Wednesday, sunshine and showers, force 2 to 4, northeasterly winds, slight seas and good visibility. For North Corsica, winds are northeasterly, force 3 to 5, locally force 6. The sea is slight to moderate, visibility is good. Barometric pressure at Cap Corse, 1,015 millibars. And the outlook for Wednesday, showery, force 3 to 5, variable winds, slight seas and good visibility.
The weather forecast, brought to you by Oyster, the world's finest blue water sailing yachts. Oyster Yachts, beyond expectation.
Riviera Radio, weather.
Mainly fine, light to moderate southeasterly winds. Temperatures 26 to 28 degrees this afternoon. Overnight lows 21 degrees on the coast, 19 degrees inland with clear skies. Wednesday and Thursday, sunshine and showers, highs of 25 to 27 degrees. Finally,
how to get rid of seagulls? Staring at the birds makes them more likely to flee, according
really?
To a recent study.
Oh dear.
Seagulls notice where humans are looking and they flee faster when stared at, according to research into the behaviour of seagulls. Researchers from Exeter found that they could get around 2 metres closer to the seabirds if they didn't look directly at them while approaching. Furthermore, the team found the younger gulls had the same reaction as their elders, suggesting the behaviour is either innate or learnt very quickly. The team also confirmed that urban gulls are bolder than their rural counterparts, allowing humans to get closer and being more likely to walk and not fly away.
Who are you looking at?
They can be very scary.